Ville 1. And if I could ask you, first of all, Helena, to tell me about your background before the war. Where were you born?
In Lodz, in Poland.
And what was your family? Could you tell me some details?
Yes, I was born with Helena Silberbeck. You know, this was my maiden name. I was the seventh child. I had brothers and sisters. And my father owned in grocery, in wholesale of grocery in Lodz. This was a very big family. My father was with seven brothers, and all the brothers were married, have children, and have all business shops with delicatessen. Well, you know, this was in Poland the known family, because we have two Silberbeck families. One was in vegetables and fruit, and one was in grocery. We were from the grocery from there.
So the name was Silberberg.
Yes. Silberberg. Yes.
Silberberg. B-E-R-G.
Yes.
Thank you very much. Were you a religious family?
Yes, my father was. My grandfather was very religious. My grandfather was taken to the camp when the war broke out. He was 93, and he was very from, very religious. My mother was very religious, and my father. They were not Hasidim, but very, very Orthodox. And the life was treated perfect in Yiddish way, very beautiful. And we went, I went to the school, to the Jewish school. I went to, then I went to the school for 3 years to prepare myself. I want to be a barrister. And I was very, very, actually very good in the school. And they want to help me to educate me, but the war broke out in between. I am born the 30th of October, 1925.
So you would have been 2014 when the war started.
Yes.
Yes.
Exactly, actually. Because in October, the Germans invaded Poland. And I was just finishing the 7th year of school to go into the higher school, but the war broke out. Mm-hmm.
Before you tell me about that, Helena, and I hope very much you're going to give me details of the impact of the war, what was life like for a Jewish child in Lodz before the war? What
very sort normal, of very normal, very nice. You have nice communities, they keep very close together. We have a nice school life, we were actually very proud to be Polish. We were, you know, very happy in the school. I had a very lovely childhood.
Did you speak the Polish language?
I speak fluently, better than English. It's my mother language. I still correspond with in Polish, mostly.
You would have spoken Polish at home rather than Yiddish, would you?
We spoke Polish, but we spoke Yiddish. I speak fluently Yiddish, though. Because my mother used to weigh in wig when she was young. And of the wicked white head, because she was very religious for my grandfather. My mother was born in Russia, and they came after the pogrom to Poland. And my grandfather, from mother's side, had been a factory near Lodz in Pabianice from how can you say? They were making clothes, you know. For, this is a different name in Polish. And he was very successful. My mother went to the private Jewish school, and she was engaged when she was 16 or 17 years. You know, this way the marriage adjusted with the parents. You know, she saw my father on the first time when she was introduced to him, and then for the big holidays, and then to the wedding. So actually, she was 19 or 20 when she was married, and then she had constantly children. I was the seventh, the youngest one, because by the Jewish laws, by the Catholic, you cannot. You have to be pregnant, you have to have a child. And I have one sister still alive. She survived Bergen-Belsen.
Is that all from your family of seven?
Everybody was sent to Auschwitz and Majdanek and Treblinka. The whole family. We were my two brothers, my sister, my other sister. One survived. Found out this after the war, 2 years after the war, where I was searching with the Red Cross, because she survived Bergen-Belsen when the German army, when the English army came, and she was in hospital very ill. And she was searching for me, and I was searching for her. I lived in Germany after the war. My husband was from Germany. I was actually born Polish Jew. The parents lived in Germany. The father was in, after the First World War, he was prisoner of war by the Germans. And when he was freed, when the war was over, he started to remain there. He was on the Luxembourg border, a beautiful place. And there he bought a house and worked and had shop with shoes, and he was dealing in cattle, you know.
What was your sister's name?
Zhenya.
How do you spell that?
Z-E-N-E, Zhenya. She still lives in Argentina. She was twice married. The first husband was killed in concentration camp. When she came to Argentina, when my uncle was still alive, then she married second time a man from Warsaw, but lost a wife and child in the camp. And she had not any children. She's 10 years older than me. She was 17 born, my older sister. And she was very, very unhappy the last 14 years because her second husband passed away and she's very lonely. I was 4 years ago there to visit her with my late husband. And now I cannot fly for health reasons. It's too far. And she had an operation with the eyes, the poor girl, and she's not very well either. So we only correspond just to be able to read the letter.
Going back again before the war, I suppose your house would have been a kosher household, was it?
Very strictly kosher. Yes.
And did you suffer any anti-Semitism before the war started?
I cannot say. We know that they were anti-Semitic, but we employed Polish people. My nanny was Polish. The clinic lady was Polish. The woman who came to make fire on Saturday was Polish. And I, in school, I was with Polish children. And I was mixing with children, with the parents, where their fathers was in the police, you know. And I used to attend all the classes, sometimes the little classes too, because it was very interesting. And during the school years, I not know anything about anti-Semitism. Probably the older people, you know. 1935, 36 started to be very, not actually already 29, but I started by 35 when I was a child in second school. We couldn't go out after 5 o'clock on the street. Because the way, you know, pogroms from the Nazis, when you know, the way the Volksdeutschen, what they called them. And it was better when you were when it's dark indoors. It started to be very unpleasant. And then the Germans came in unexpected when the war broke out.
Do you remember that day when the war started?
When the war started, now I remember when the German came in to lodge. And this was end of October 1939. And this was, from then on, we couldn't buy anything in the shops. We went in, there was all full of food, and they have said, no, we cannot serve any Jewish people. We have to stay in the queue the whole night to have the money in the baker shop of some bread. And usually before they open the bakery, after we are waiting there, in cold, you know, for 10, 12 hours, then the Volksdeutschen, you know, the Polish, whatever, already the hacking cross on there, used to go through the queue and to see when somebody looked Jewish, they were taken out, they couldn't buy any bread. And a few times after me, I was a school child, I was wearing the lung care, you know, and then when they came to look after the people, and he went after me, he left me, because I not look Jewish at all. So one who was from the neighborhood, I don't know, he said to him, she is Jewish. And then he said, you are mistaken. He left me be in the queue, you know. Oh, there's so much to tell. I have to go to find some potatoes. We were hungry because after 4 or 5 weeks, they directly closed up the park. We have to leave our home. We have to leave our furniture. Everything was taken in the coaches. And we went to the old part of Lodz, you know, like here is Eastern. So we were there put in, and this was it was open till 5 o'clock, you know. But you were very, very unsafe to go out, you know. It was absolutely not to recognize. Well, it was completely changed overnight. So because I not look Jewish, and we have need medication, people start to be very ill, and we have not the nice food, till they start to give us a ration of bread and some soup, because this is organized. So we used to go on the black market. What you see, we were trying. We took down the Star of David from the coat, you know, and we put it in the pocket, and we tried to go out in the shop. So when we went in, then we had to say, Hi Hitler, then we could buy something. Once was very funny. It was Sunday morning. I went to one of the shops and I bought 10 or 12 pounds of potatoes, which was a very, very big catch, you know. And I went on the train. You know, we have the not the buses, we have the trains. You know what I mean?
The tram. Is it a tram?
The tram, yeah, yes. But was open, you know, was not closed. And I stand in the front because I want to have the potatoes next to me. And when he came to ask the conductor for the money, so I took out some money and my star fell down. But then he was a young Hitlerjugend man. And he saw it and he put down the boot and he closed it, you know, that the conductor doesn't see the star. And when he went away, then he opened it, you know, he gave it back to me. And he made like this and I was completely struck and he saved my life.
And that was a Hitler youth?
Yes, a Hitler youth, yes. Young men were probably were not willing to do it. So you have there some situations. Anyway, then we went. First I started to work when they closed the ghetto. People started to start.
Yes, before you tell me about your work, you know, this when you moved from your home, this would have been into the ghetto, would it?
Yes.
Yes, and this was in the old part of Lodge,
the
was
old
it?
Part of Lodge, yes.
Yes. How big was it?
I've never seen before. Mm. Well, it must be very big because we are nearly 280,000 people, and they came from all the small parts of Poland. They were all sent to Lodge. Lodge was the biggest compact, you know, what you call this summer place. This is what they were deselected, and they were sent to different concentration camps. They were in prison. What was called Czarnieckiego was a very big prison. And from there, out they were all sent to different camps.
Where did you live, first of all, in the ghetto? Could you tell me something about ghetto
yes.
life?
We lived in the... We had one room for seven people. My brother was sent already with his young wife to Auschwitz to build the bunkers, you know. It was announced that they were going to get more bread. And everybody who... joined in, then he got bread, two full bread, what was exactly like two diamonds, and they were going to have a better life. So he left very early. He was blonde, a beautiful young man, was a few years older than me. And then we went, a first time they sent to young children, I was still in child, we walked off the plantation, you know, we were cleaning the fields where carrots were growing and potatoes and everything. This was the food for the German army, you know. We have to clean it, you know. It was very, very tiring work because we had not enough food. We were young. We have not any milk, not any meat. We have only every morning. You got every week in a bonus for one bread. The bread was approximately, let me see, 3 pounds or something. Dark bread, not nice cooked. And this we have to make of 7 days. Now, people who couldn't stay so long, the men actually, they died much quicker because the way they used to eat and they have very big, very heavy work to do. And they eat it up in 1 or 2 days. Then they start the 6 days, they were typhus ill from drinking water and they died, you know. My brother-in-law, actually my sister's husband, he was from Germany, and he was very, you know, organized. He put this bread of 7 days, nobody got a piece more, and we tried to, you have to buy a bit of coffee from chicory, you know, in the shops with sweet eggs, because you have not any foyer to make place, you have not any wood, you have nothing. When you not went to work, in the morning you went down to the appeal, because we lived, after 1 year we lived in big factories, you know, they were empty from the people, and were rooms for women and for men.
And that was after 1 year, was it,
yes,
when you moved two factories? Yes. And would that have been the remaining family? You all moved together, did you?
Yeah, we have one room for all the family.
And
so I worked part of the plantage for 1 year, you know, to clean the fields. And it was a disastrous thing because we were under supervision from the Germans. And when the clock started to bell for 12 o'clock for our soup, you know, we have to stay up in the queue. We have our, the little, like the soldiers, the little container from, what was this, from, not from aluminium, from the Anavan. And then we got in soup. Now, when you were strong enough to push, then you have some potatoes in it. But when you were on the end, then sometimes there was not any potatoes, only half-cooked cabbage or something. And this was the food for the whole day. We were all blown up from drinking water, not to feel. The hunger was terrible. It's nothing worse than to be hungry and young. This is not, not to imagine. Our dream was for 6 years nearly, when we survived, to have bread on the table and could cut how many slices we had. And this is why after the war we started to eat and we became ill and I became fat. Because I couldn't stop, you know. This was such a beautiful feeling. You can't have bread, you can't have butter, you can't have milk. It was fantastic. But it was a long time till it came to it. It was not so easy.
How about your parents at this early stage?
Were they with you? My father was already killed in 1940. He was beaten up because the soldiers, the Germans hatched him on the street. He was wearing a little beard, you know. It was winter, very good looking man. And they take him to the street to clean the snow, you know. And some of them were that sadistic that they put the snow in the mouth to stop, till they suffocate nearly. And they start to cut up the beard, and always they cut up sometimes with the skin too, you know, when he came home was bleeding. This happened to my brother, this happened to my father. Anyway, he became very ill. He got bronchitis, then he got pneumonia because it was cold, and he died in 1940. And it was nowhere to bury him because we already had graves hundreds in the grave. And it was very difficult. I was then a young child. My sister, who lives now in Argentina, she was ill of typhus. She was in the hospital for very dangerous ill people. My mother was very, very ill, and she was depressed, and she had actually melancholic, you know. She don't know what has happened. She was in the 48, 50 years of age, a beautiful woman, spoiled because she had a good life, and always in business, and always in a big family. And she, when the father died, and she started to not to be, we have to look after her like a little child. And I remember my Anna sister, and the brother was before me, she was working in the straw shoe abteilung. You know, this is where we make shoes from straw for the Germans to put in the boots when they were in Russia, where it was very cold. It was a very hard job. You have to plate the straw, you know. How you call this in English, the straw? Yes, from the corn. And then we have to make, this was have to be measured. Everybody have to make 60 meters a day. And then we have to sew it together for the big boots, you know. I worked after this when I went there, they took me. I worked there for nearly 2 or 3 years. Actually, I had a picture. Funny enough, what I am pictured up with, and I was 40, 15 years of age, and was, down was Litzmannstadt Ghetto Stroschuh Abteilung 1941. And I don't know where it went. I have two such pictures. And because some of them have a camera and we have the pictures, we never know that we're going to survive it, you know. Anyway, it was a hard job. It was very, very difficult. And we were living like, you know, from day to day. With hope that we're going to survive. I was young, we had not any youth, was not any culture, not any books. It was nothing.
What were you wearing? What sort of clothes did you have at this time?
We left all the things what we have, you know. We have not any shoes, we wear wooden shoes, you know. And all our old dresses what we have, you know, all old coats, everything. When you went to Auschwitz or to Königswusterhausen or to Majdanek, then you got later on when everything was broken in the stripes, you know. We have not the stripes. We have not the numbers. We have here the Star of David and on the back, you know. And we were in the enclosure. Every morning when we went to work, for example, to the factory where we make the shoes, then on the front where the soldiers staying there, and they let us through, and we have to say to ordinary soldiers, good morning, Herr Oberwachtmann, good morning, Herr that they obey our boss, you know. And then they take us in, and then on top with the elder, this was when the, you know, the straw came in very big wagons, and this wasn't on the field. When put up like to dry, you know, like a little head. And this was taken out to make the plates, you know. And then when we finished 1 year with the plates, they took us to make the shoes with the needle. We have to plate it, what you buy in a, sometimes in Spain, the heads, or you buy the handbags. But this was very sick, you know, and very big boots, because you have to be in one size that everybody can go when they are in Russia, where you're freezing, that they can put in the boots in it. It was actually labor only for the army, the whole, yes. They were your factories. I worked in the shaft outside where you, for the boots, for the long boots for the men, you put together, you know, the thing. Schäftabteilung is in German. When you work in the factory and you help to make the boots, you prepare the boots to the sole. Not the sole, but the sea round and round from the boots, what you have to prepare. Then we have factories to clean the uniforms that came from the field, you know. This was to be cleaned, repaired, and sent back.
What sort of state were they in? The, you know, uniforms when you had them. Did you do that work, Halina?
I was a few months there, yes. Yes. The uniforms, some of them were with the torn, some of what you say, you know, the way they came from the field, probably from the soldiers, was very acute, and they sent them in. The way you cleaned and washed and cleaned and repaired, the one who could sew, make it ready, you know, there was, this, the whole ghetto was one big factory. People who couldn't go to work have no right to live. Children of 6 years were working to work with a little container for the soup. People, old one. When you couldn't work, you got not any bread, not any ticket, then you have to die. It was terrible. And you know, it was such a tragedy, I found this out after the war. When one from the family died, they had kept him hidden, not to bury him, and to get the ticket for the bread from very intelligent, very wealthy, prosperous people, to hack the bread more. And on the street it was terrible, because you have seen only the you know, the by hand tools, the lick, the, what you call this, the, what you have by truck, usually horses bring this.
The cart.
The cart. Mm-hmm. But they were taken by men, and were on top forward decks, and in the middle forward. You always have seen people carrying them to the ground, you know. And they were not buried. I couldn't have for my father, who was 1940, I couldn't have for him any wood to make the grave, but he had to be buried like this, you know. I want to go to Poland to find it.
Yes, I'm sorry, I didn't quite understand how they were buried, Halina.
The Jewish people, when they die, they are buried in a wooden box. Not so plain, like you have to be very, very normal, not posh, only wooden box. And they were covered, of course, in the white sheet. All the men are covered in the plaid shawl, you know. And we have not any wood to be able to do it, you know. So have to be there, everything taken, hush, hush, hush. Life was not of importance, because we were only workers. Person who was ill did not exist. They were hiding. They couldn't, because it was impossible. And of course, after 1 or 2 years, people start to be very, very skinny, very unnourished. And we called them the Muslims, like in Auschwitz, you know. It was in, when I remember, I cannot believe it, I survived. It's unbelievable.
So how was your father buried then? As he
was buried on the Jewish grounds. And now it was 1940, but he had not the box to put him in. He was buried in the ground, because it was not anything to get. It was impossible, you know.
You were saying you came from an Orthodox family.
Yes,
was the sort of food, I know that the total lack of it, from what you've said.
No, listen, you have not any meat. So you have not any butter. You have not any chickens of them, doesn't exist. You only get the ticket to have your bread, and by the work you have your soup. So when it came Easter, what we eat bread. Now, we, the very Orthodox, have not eaten bread. So long the community, the Jewish organization was there, then instead the bread, we used to get the flour. And then we used to make the unsalted bread, you know, without the yeast, you know. and the way you're baking this in the very little circumstances, and the way you're keeping this perfect, you know. And when now what we have New Year and the Atonement Day, what you have to fast, we fast the whole year. But the very Orthodox have not eaten the piece of bread either, and not the soup, and they went to work. Some of them not touched it, not in crumb, because they were strictly Orthodox. And we have to pay it in cellars from the old houses, you know. My father, he was holding the service because he was very known in the Jewish religion. Before he died from hunger, yes. He couldn't eat the bit of soup with barley. It was sometimes the barley soup, you know. It was not barley, but the water of it, with one or two pieces of potato. It kept us alive. And then when we got in winter, sometimes in ticket to get, for example, 2 pounds of potatoes or a few grams of the chicory coffee and sweet eggs, you know. But the potatoes were always frozen, the very red, they couldn't be cooked. And you have not wood to make fire to cook it. So you lived actually on the soup. You cannot believe it. Nobody can believe it. Every film what you see from Spielberg in all the last one what he made from Auschwitz, you know, what was very, very moving, and it was true. But they had the people very nice, nourished artists here. They couldn't be so put down to skin and bones. But whatever you have seen, the real atmosphere was much worse. We have not any radio, not any newspapers, not any news. When some from the leaders said the radio was closed up in the cellar, and then one of the analysts to say what was the news, you know, we were hoping when the BBC came on the station to hear what is happening. So after the fields, I went to the Strohschwabteilung, I walked there. Then, 1942, they took me to the railway stations. Because the men already had not any strength, they took young girls, you know. And I walked by the loading and unloading the goods. I was loading there the uniforms, and we were unloading the fuel, you know, and the wood. Oh, this was terrible. And we were working there, 4 girls to the big wagon with the very big, you know, the shelter for your 16 pounds. We have to put up. And then the trains arrived, and they have to be in 2 hours empty because the locomotive, the engine came to take it away. So it was a very, very tough work. We were absolutely. And then when you worked after 12 hours, there was very much to do, then you got one big piece of bread more, you know, it was a very great asset. And this was the life going like this. Then we started to have in culture meetings after work in the barracks. And we were producing little plays. We were reading, and we made poems. And we were trying to give us some hope. We were trying to sing in the barracks. And then the Germans from up, they came down, and they wanted to listen to the songs, you know. They were very, some of them, when we were working in the station, you know where the trains are there. Then you have to clean the railway, you have to clean the streets, the way you go to the railway, and you have to take away all the rubbish. So I was once for a few months a horse, you know. I was the horse for the thing. And we were carrying this tool front and tool in. Oh, we have to carry out actually from the toilets in barrels to the fields, because this was supposed to be very good for, you know, compost. And then once happened to me that the soldiers come up, they were looking down, and they fall down in parcel, and then we had 2 slices bread with red sausage. I never forget it. And then we could share this for 4 years. It was like a beautiful present. And then we were watching us when we were working. We worked Sunday too, you know, we worked the whole week. It was not 7 days a week.